Hi there, folks. Soapbox Klotz here. Just want to let you know that we had some pretty significant audio issues with this episode that we had already recorded once. So we decided to go forward with this, and I'm really sorry. We're going to try to work out those technical issues going forward. So hopefully in our next episode, we'll have much better audio quality, and going forward, I will get better at doing the edit.
Hello, and welcome to something new and totally different, and that is Twig and Soap Talk Games.
What's up, fellas?
That's Twig. I'm Soapbox Klotz. And we're going to talk about games. We both are big fans of games. And we come from different walks of life and different strokes, if you will, because we're different folks. And yeah,
Different generations.
We are on separate sides of the aisle on a number of real life things, and we are about as different as you can get on many aspects, but we have a common love of games and we like to talk about them, and we're both kind of prone to ranting a little bit. So,
and I want to get this out there at the onset, don't fucking call me okay boomer, because I'm not technically a boomer. I'm Gen X.
Okay boomer.
Although I am at the very early end of Gen X, I'm still fucking Gen X. Proceed.
I'm an actual millennial, but it's like people who wax on about millennials don't, like, we're in our 30s, dude. Like, we're not the 19-year-olds. Anyways, we wanted to intro who we are a little bit. And first of all, I wanted to talk about how we met and how Twig and I became friends. We both played a game called Marvel Avengers Alliance many moons ago, back in like 2013, 2014. It was a Facebook Flash game that was set in the Marvel Universe. It was a really cool game that had RPG elements, and there was a surprising community that kind of sprouted up, and I was fortunate enough to fall in with Charles McFall and Brian Ibbett, who were hosting the show from the Helicarrier. At that time, Twig, you were running a couple of different Facebook groups, if I recall. Like, you had Mug, right? Marvel Universe Gazette?
Yes, I did. And I was also part of, at the time, I don't know about, somebody might want to fact check this, but at the time, I believe in 2013, Kaiser Allen had a group called Avengers League.
Yep.
That was the largest single Facebook, or largest single group on Facebook, I believe at the time, with over 40,000 members for this game.
It was crazy. I was in that group for, it was wild. Yeah, so I fell in with Charles and Brian, and I joined the FTH team a little bit into their run, and I basically wrote it out almost until the end, and then we spun that off into the GSTU network and Breaking the Panel. And basically, yeah, like, during all that time, I got to talking to Twig, and we would talk about stuff, and you told me many times that you liked listening to the show for my insight, and, you know, I ended up joining Mug at one point and hanging out with you guys, and I think we ended up playing Monster Legends together at one point, I think.
Yes. I think you played it for like 16 minutes.
Yeah. Well, it was like a month or two. Yeah, so we hit it off, and we've been friends since, and we often get into it on Facebook over real life issues. We get real into it.
Yeah.
But we've always been able to reach out to each other and say, no matter how heated it got, hey, we're cool, right? And it's always like, yeah, we're cool. And so we can squash that beef.
Exactly. I think we need to underscore our drastic political differences. So, yeah, that's why it gets heated, but yes, we always come together.
Pretty big emphasis on that. Yes. But we do have a common love of games. So a little bit about myself. I am in my mid-30s. So I was born in the 80s. I grew up with 80s and 90s games, which was predominantly like the onset of the NES forward, Sega Genesis. My first console that I owned was a PlayStation 1. And then when I graduated from high school, I bought my own PlayStation 2 with my own money from my first job. And have been mostly a PlayStation and more than that, a PC gamer since then. My father brought home a PC with a 486 processor when I was a kid. And so if you're old enough and you knew about PCs at the time, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So I grew up playing a lot of shareware and freeware that was going around, as well as some of the wonderful old school computer RPGs like all the Dungeons & Dragons stuff, online MMOs at the onset with Ultima Online and EverQuest, and eventually World of Warcraft and other stuff. But yeah, so I cut my teeth playing PlayStation and also PC games. And
the wonderful world of the 56K modem days.
Oh, well, ours was, we had a 56K modem, but because I live in the country, it can only connect at 24.4. And...
Oh, so you were really screaming at mom when she picked up the phone when you were trying to download a picture,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much. It was rough. Mm-hmm. It was rough days. I cannot believe that I was able to play games like Ultima Online and EverQuest on 24.4 dial-up. Like, it's wild to think about that in hindsight. But it was what it was. So, Twig, how about you? What was your come-up with video games?
Well, I'm a little older than you. I am 53. So I was there when all the shit started.
Mm-hmm.
I got my teeth cut when my mother had a Commodore 64, which she used it because she worked at the local community college. She used that computer to work at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured out, I think one of her colleagues gave her a floppy disk, you know, those big-ass floppy disks back in the day.
Yep.
Of a game on it called Epics. I'm sorry, called Jumpman. It's made by the defunct company, Epyx, E-P-Y-X. Everybody needs to look that up. It was an engaging game. It has not aged well, except for nostalgia. Every now and then, I still will crank up my Raspberry Pi, and I will put on the Commodore emulator, and I will play that. It's nothing but a stick figure crawling up and down ladders, avoiding bullets. It's that simple. But I will tell you that it is... It's all nostalgia, really, but I still love it, and that's what got me going. Now, the brief moment when I was in college, I had no consoles, no games, didn't care because I was an athlete. I was playing pickup basketball for 3 or 4 hours a day. But once I got done with college and I came back, I had the stupid misfortune of not being smart and thinking that there was some kind of law saying you could not have more than one console in your home. So I played buy a Genesis, sell it to get a Super Nintendo because the graphics were better, get pissed off that a Super Nintendo's library wasn't building fast enough when it launched, selling it to go back to Genesis. I did that 2 or 3 times. I could have just kept them both. And matter of fact, if I had them now, they'd be in my collection.
Yeah.
Did have the misfortune of buying everything that everybody put out, Sega-wise, because I'm a huge Sega fanboy. So, yes, I was one of the 5 people that bought the fucking 32X and the Sega CD. I had all that shit. And, yeah, that was a monstrosity under my television.
Yeah. But
I've now kept every console since. I'm up to 12 consoles now, which isn't a lot. Not when you look at MJR's collection or... Spawn Waves or people like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm starting. I know it's a little late. I'm 53, but I will have all the consoles.
MJR is Metal Jesus Rocks, for those who aren't familiar with that acronym, who is one of my favorite gaming YouTubers. His channel is fantastic. Go check him out. I'm also a big fan of Beat 'em Ups, who focuses mostly on the Nintendo Switch. Yeah, so, well, let's bring that
not
up to
anymore.
Date. Well... He still focuses on the Switch. He just doesn't have the relationship with Nintendo anymore.
Yeah.
What is awesome. But let's talk about our current, like, you know, the kind of stuff that we play nowadays. Like, what consoles do you play the most today?
Well, it depends on what day it is. A lot of my gaming time is with my arcade cabinets, which we'll go into, I'm assuming, at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as consoles go, the vast majority of my time now is spent on my Switch.
Mm-hmm.
The Switch has a robust retro e-commerce that I absolutely love. But the current generation games they have are fabulous as well.
Mm-hmm.
Super Mario Odyssey, we've talked about that before. I think that is the second best Super Mario game that's ever been made behind Super Mario World.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic game.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, it's a fantastic game. It's really highly regarded among critics and fans. And it is, like you said, Super Mario World will probably always hold that special top spot for a lot of people. Super Mario 3 is a strong contender as well.
Yes.
But Super Mario Odyssey is a fantastic game. Super Mario 64 as well probably rounds out the top four, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's list for that is a little bit different. But
it
yeah.
is.
Yep.
And I would say Sunshine's underrated as well.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the Galaxy's on the Wii. The Galaxy 2 was okay because it had Yoshi, but for me personally, I just wasn't into the Galaxy games.
Hey, that's fair.
Yeah, Switch is what I spend most of my time playing.
Yep, Switch. Same for me. I have a PlayStation 4. I hardly ever use it. The only game I bought for it recently is Final Fantasy VII Remake. I played it on stream twice, and I haven't touched it since. I bought it in March. It came out around my birthday, which is in March, and I bought it then, and I haven't played it. My fiance Nicole gives me so much crap about buying games and not playing them. I'm predominantly a PC gamer. I play online games on the PC. I play some retro titles. You mentioned that about the Switch. I do own some retro titles and some indie titles, which is the other thing that the Switch is great for. Nintendo yes. made a huge stride forward with the Nintendo Switch in being inclusive to smaller developers. It's also let in some shovelware, which isn't great, but there is a ton of fantastic retro and indie titles available on the Switch, which makes them very accessible for a whole new bunch of audiences. A lot of those titles are also available on PC, and I own some of them on both. I own games like Bastion and Transistor on both. It is what it is. But yeah, the PC, I have over 800 games on Steam. That is largely because of back in the day, it was Steam sales when we used to get those crazy lightning deals where it would go to like, this is 88% off. Do you want to spend $2 for this game that used to be 60? Yes. Yes, I do. Or more recently in the last few years, it's been Humble Bundle. Humble Bundle, it's often like $15 or $20 for the entire bundle, and you get like 10, 15 games sometimes. There's the monthly. I'm a grandfathered monthly choice subscriber, which means I only pay $12 plus tax every month to get 10 games, which I paused this month, though, because it wasn't very good this month. So, yeah, I racked up a lot of games that way. I've actually gotten to the point where I'm not redeeming every code for a game that I haven't redeemed yet. Like, some of them, just like...
Right.
I just really don't want to keep clogging my library. 800 titles is too many titles, if I'm honest. And I need to spend time playing them, which I don't always... See, I'll get sucked into something like a game I'm going to talk about in a little bit when we talk about what we've been playing lately. And I'll put 80 hours into that and not touch any of the other games I own. So let's transition to that. Let's talk about what have you been playing recently, Twig?
Well... the aforementioned Super Mario Odyssey, I spent the majority of last week. I'd already beaten it once, but even though Nintendo doesn't help the completionist because they have no fucking achievements,
mm-hmm.
I decided I wanted to go back and try to get all the moons and try to get all the purple coins, and that's not going very well. So I've put that down for a little bit, and I picked up, you talk about getting games you haven't played. I got 10 games for Christmas. I had given my wife a wish list of what I wanted for Christmas, and damn if she didn't get them all. So I've got a lot of AAA titles for Christmas that I've only been able to put a few hours at each because I play one, and then, oh shit, I haven't played this one. So I put another one in, mm-hmm. and then by the time I get to the one I took out, I've forgotten in the story where I was, so I'm going having to backtrack. So I've decided that what I put in today is what's going to hold me for a while, and that's going to be Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Yes, I'm a huge Greek mythology nerd.
Okay.
One of my favorite PC games of all time is Age of Mythology.
Okay.
Old school turn-based real-time strategy game. But I love that. God of War, we'll talk about at some point. Not the new one, the previous three. So I'm playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I posted on Facebook that I'm realizing that Ubisoft is an underrated game developer because I've only got about 10 hours into it right now, mm-hmm. but it's a phenomenal game. Now, I want to get Black Flag because I believe I saw Black Flag on the eShop sale, if it's still on sale. That and another one of the Assassin's Creed titles on the eShop for Nintendo. that I think I'm going to try to pick up, because I've heard nothing but good things about Black Flag. But I'm not going to touch it until I get done with Odyssey.
Yeah, Black Flag. You're basically a pirate one, and that one's highly regarded. See, now I played the one right before Odyssey, and that is Origins. That was in Humble Bundle last year, and I got it, and I loved that game. And I understand that some of the combat and gearing system has changed from Origins to Odyssey, but I really enjoyed Origins. I loved the story, which it's set in Egypt, and so you have a little bit of an Egypt aspect. You also have a little bit of a Roman aspect and Greek aspect, so you get a little bit of that stuff kind of sprinkled in, which is really cool.
Yes,
and
I'm gonna have to pick that up then.
Oh yeah, I think you would like that game if you love that. You know, that period of history. It is, Bayek is an amazing, amazing protagonist. Has a really soul crushing story, and he's on a revenge quest, and it's actually really fun. And the weapon system and the fights are pretty engaging, and like the world is just super cool. And I really enjoyed it for a while. I didn't beat it, but I played it a lot I put a lot of hours into it before I finally set it down. Similarly, not an Ubisoft game, but basically considered to be like an Assassin's Creed-like game, the Shadow of Mordor series. I have played both of those, and I really like those. So if you like Tolkien, which I know you do, because you recently talking about it, I really enjoyed those games, and the sequel, Shadow of War, was actually hugely forward for that franchise. The only problem is, once you get to, I think it's Act 2 or 3, it starts to lag a little, and you're like, all right, I might not beat this. I've kind of, played it out, but it is fun up to that point. So that's another one I would put on your radar, to give it a try. The second game, for sure. The first one's good, too, but the second one has got a lot more. And that, of course, has the innovative Nemesis system, which is when you're fighting the orc captains, if you beat them, other ones will get more powerful, get new abilities and stuff. Sometimes they'll see you do stuff and it'll change them. If they beat you, you respawn, but they get more powerful because they beat you. It's wild. And the Nemesis system was such a huge leap forward and a really innovative addition to those kind of games, and it's such a cool thing. And it gets played out even more in the second game, so can't gush enough about that.
That sounds awesome, having AI for your NPCs. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it controls your behavior. It makes some of the boss, the mini bosses and stuff, harder to fight. And because they'll have weaknesses and strengths. So, they might be immune to ranged, or they might be immune to sneak attacks, but they'll be vulnerable to, fire. They'll be scared of, Karagors or trolls or something. And it just, it lets you get to use the environment a lot. You get to shoot barrels and torches and stuff, and you get to shoot open locked cages with Karagors and trolls and stuff in them to smash everything around. It's awesome. It's really, really well designed game.
I'm jotting this down as we speak.
which is a running trend in our friendship. we talked about it. So I forgot to mention this earlier. We actually recorded this first episode once before, and my hard drive filled up and that file got corrupted. So we're taking a second stab at this to try to kind of recreate the same vibe. One of the things we talked about that first time was when you were standing in a GameStop, right?
Yes.
And you were like, hey, well, what do you think between these games? So I made a suggestion. We'll talk about that when we talk about our topic for the episode, but
right,
we have recommended games to each other for years, and it's always held up pretty well. I think we've managed to find we know what each other likes in the games that we both like, so we recommend the similar titles. I think you'll love Shadow of War for sure. You might enjoy Shadow of Mordor as well. It's a little bit more of a simplified version.
I've got this written down, and I will check it out. As a matter of fact, I thought I saw Shadow of Mordor on sale at either the eShop or the PlayStation Store recently. I don't remember which. I'll have to log on and see which one I saw.
And it's beautiful game too, because it totally evocative of the Peter Jackson films. It's got that same similar styling.
Well, I love the films, and I'm one. I guess I'm one of the five people that love the Hobbit films too. I know you're gonna give me shit about that, but I loved all six of the films. I'm sorry, I did.
Is this show over yet?
It is what it is.
Oh, jeez. So that, I guess, kind of brings us to the topic for the show. We're going to try to have a topic for this show every time. And the topic is kind of a simple one this time. It is, what makes games great for you? So let's start with you, Twig. What makes games great for you?
Well, like we mentioned on our first attempt at the show, what makes current games great for me? Well, let me backtrack a little bit. That's changed over the years because I started out with vector games, you know? So, going back to the Asteroids and things like that, those have high scores. So if I enjoy the games, I'm enjoying it enough to I want to keep pumping quarters into it. I'm trying to get on the leaderboard. I'm trying to unseat whatever three initials, which it was typically ass when you were at Putt-Putt, on the top score. So I'm trying to do that. And then as we get up in the generations, then, you know, the gameplay mechanics or and the visual change. And I still think to this day, the change between PS2 and PS3 generations was the largest jump between generations that we've seen in gaming. Some would argue going from 8 to 16-bit, and I could see that. But I think going from the PS2 to the PS3 generations was a huge leap in graphical fidelity. So then when you get to the PS3 generation above, then it's going to turn into the biggest thing that draws me to games, excluding sports titles, because those are their own beast, is going to be the narrative. I want an interactive movie when I'm playing a game. Told the story that one of my top five favorite games of all time is The Last of Us for the PS3.
Yep.
That the gameplay mechanics are wonky. I know it's rudimentary. I don't care. I played that game after that initial shock, and I'm not going to do any spoilers if anybody has never played that game. But after that initial shock on the prologue, I'm sitting there playing that game simply to get to the next cutscene. And no game before that did I ever do that. I don't remember ever, because mostly cutscenes, you're trying to hit X to get past the cutscenes, you get back to gameplay, correct?
Yeah.
It's like when we're talking about when Marvel Avengers Alliance, the writers are great, I guess. I don't know. I never read a single one of the text in those games. I didn't give a shit about the story. All I wanted to do was to get done with that battle so that I could get to the next one and try to get that damn weapon after that RNG fucked me for the 15th time when I've gone through that map to try to get the special operations or the SO weapon or things like that. Because RNG always fucked you. But now, that's what draws me to the game. Gameplay has come, weirdly enough, somewhat secondary to me, if that makes any sense.
No,
and when you were telling me the story, when you were relaying the story about me calling you from a GameStop, there was a brief moment in time, from the mid-2000s up until 5 or 6 years ago when I was done paying child support, where I didn't get to play anything because I couldn't afford it. So I'm playing catch-up. So I call you, and I give you a choice of, I think it was three titles that I was looking at, and you ended up selecting one for me to get, which I listened to, Horizon Zero Dawn for the PlayStation 4, which is realistically another entry into my top five games of all time because of the story.
That is an incredible game. And the gameplay is fun, too. You know, you mentioned that the story kind of takes precedence for you. And in those big AAA titles, I have to agree with you. Like, it's the story's got to be what pulls me in. Ironically, for the indie titles, I tend to, like, enjoy mechanics. Like, I love a good story in an indie title or a small publisher title, but I don't necessarily have to have a great story. Like, interesting art design and mechanics could be really good for me and could really make it stand out as something I definitely want. So,
like Hollow Knight?
Yeah, Hollow Knight. I played that on stream for a little bit.
Celeste.
Oh, I'll tell you the Celeste story on another episode sometime. I don't want to get into it right now. But basically, like, it's the AAA titles. I want a great story. I want great visuals. I really want to be pulled in by the story. Last of Us is one of the best stories I've ever seen in gaming. And honestly, I didn't enjoy the gameplay that much because the gameplay is a little grindy and a little unforgiving at times. But the story was so good. That is the kind of game that I would watch somebody do a Let's Play and just be blown away. Horizon Zero Dawn.
Uncharted is another one.
Yep, Uncharted. Uncharted has good gameplay, though, as well as a great story. And good multiplayer as well. That's the other surprising part about the Uncharted series. Is I don't know how active they are now, but at the time, the multiplayer was pretty solid. What have you been playing most recently, other than Odyssey?
Well, actually, both titles were Super Mario Odyssey and Assassin's Creed Odyssey. But literally what I played right before we're recording this was Burger Time.
Burger Time?
Yes. I was out there trying to beat my high score in Burger Time. That game is hard as fuck. it is. It is. And I have the Burger Time cabinet from Arcade 1-Up. So I was in the game room, and it's like it's beckoning me. It's like it's trolling me. It's like, all right, 28,800. Can you beat me today? And I go over there, 9,000, 8,000. So I just say, fuck it, and turn it off.
That's wild. I most recently have been playing one game almost exclusively, and that is Hunt Showdown, which is a title from Crytek. This is a German developer that developed the Cry engine. They developed the games Crysis and Crysis 2, if you might be familiar with that. For years, those were considered some of the top-end, best benchmarking games for high-end graphic equipment for computers, for GPUs and such. And Hunt Showdown is a really interesting multiplayer PvP VE game where there's two modes. There's a quick play, which is essentially a battle royale, where you drop into the Louisiana Bayou in the late 1800s, and you have to collect weapons, which is all, you know, Gunsmoke-esque, old Mosin-Nagants and Winfields and all that kind of stuff. And you
were using them back in my day.
Yeah, yeah, back in your day, you know, in your childhood. And okay. Basically, you it's a battle royale. You run through and you gather a bunch of weapons and you have to find these clues and you become the wellspring. And whoever is the wellspring at the end of the match when the time runs out, they get to survive. Everybody else dies automatically that hasn't already been killed. And that character gets to be kept and recruited, and you can use it for what's the other mode called Bounty Hunt, which was the original mode in the game. That can be, you can play that solo in twos or in threes, and you drop into the bayou, and there's usually either one or two bosses that you get a bounty for that you have to track down clues for, find the lair, fight them generally quietly. You try to use like melee and things that don't make a lot of noise to kill them. You kill them and you have to banish them. And it's, I think it's a like 90-second countdown or something like that. Until you can collect the bounty from them, and everybody knows you're banishing them. Like, when you banish them, it goes on the map, and everybody knows it's happening. And so you have to fight everybody else to be able to grab the bounties and extract and get out with the loot, if you will. And you'll fight other teams. You'll fight PvE monsters of all different types. There's a lot of trash mobs and stuff. And it's a really beautiful game. It's got really good gunplay with a really different pace. I know I mentioned a battle royale aspect to it, but it's not a Twitch shooter like Fortnite or like a Call of Duty game. It's really a little bit of a slower pace. It really rewards patience and calculated gameplay and map knowledge and listening to the... It's got wonderful binaural audio, sound design. It's a wonderful game, and it's not a big game. It has a bit of a streaming community and a following, but it is not... I mean, I think it tops out at like, you know, maybe 10,000, 15,000 players at peak on Steam at any given time, but it is a good game with a cool community, and they're always adding new stuff. And one of my absolute favorite parts about it is the lead developer, Dennis, plays the game actively. He is a competent, high-level player. He plays with prominent streamers. I watch a couple of guys in particular, Psycho Ghost, who's a Austrian streamer who lives in Germany. He streams with Dennis quite a bit, Nino and a couple other guys, and they play together, and you can tell that he understands his game. He understands what his community for the game cares about, like what's good, what's not, and they make balance changes all the time that seem to adjust to how the community feels about the competitive meta and everything, and that's wonderful. And it's a cool game. It's a lot of fun. It's very addicting, but it's also the kind of thing that I can sit and I can play a quick play match and be done in 15 minutes and just go do something else. Or I can decide to settle in for an hour or so to play Bounty Hunt. And it has a timer on it. So no mission is going to take longer than an hour. So you know that you're going to be able to get in and out no matter what. You'll probably just die, but that's okay too.
Sounds like something I may want to give a shot down the road, but Battle Royale and me do not get along. I fucking hate that format. Because typically it's populated by nothing but 11-year-olds. And no matter what the title is. And, I mean, Call of Duty is, not Call of Duty, but Rainbow Six is kind of like that. My son plays it. And obviously the graphics are better than fucking Fortnite. But, I mean, it's still just polishing a turd, in my opinion. I just don't like Battle Royale. I can't stand it. All you hear is my son saying, he's got aimbots, he's hacking. Do you not think that maybe just sometimes they're better than you are?
No.
That's never the case. I'm like, oh, so you're Ninja Junior. Okay, got it. So I'll wait for the money to start rolling in.
Oh, boy.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's what I've been playing lately. I agree with you.
Go right ahead.
I agree with you on what makes gaming like great games, and that is good narrative. I do enjoy some indie games. Is it fun? Is there a replayability? I hate playing a game that I'm like, I'm never going to play this again. Which is weird because I have so many games. I don't need to replay games, but I love the idea that I could. I love the idea that I could go back, which means I like some of the roguelikes and roguelites. And I think those games have great replayability. I like the fact that you can load those up and drop in for a few minutes and drop back out and just kind of go on with your day. That's a nice little thing. I have at times done
like the toilet games you play on your phone.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, I have at times been pretty into some mobile games, but I really have tried to stay out of them lately.
Thank God.
The problem with the mobile games is they require you to play every day for X amount of hours just to keep up. And it becomes this rat race that you can never win. And you're always tempted to throw money at it. And that's just a bad idea. I don't like it.
Is that why you quit Marvel Avengers Alliance midway through?
I quit Marvel Avengers Alliance when I knew that, when I could see the writing on the wall. I could tell that the game was slowing, like the releases were slowing down. They were dropping in quality. I was reading Glassdoor reviews on the show at one point and seeing what people had said about Playdom. And I was like, nah, dude, this game is going to hell in a handbasket quickly. And a lot of people are in denial about it. And I stepped away from FTH at the time to focus on Breaking the Panel and the network. And lo and behold, a few months later, they're like, yeah, by the way, we're sunsetting the game. See ya. And yeah, I saw that coming. And Charles has said since then, he's like, yeah, you called it. Like you, it took a couple months after you said it was going to happen, but it kind of went down the way you called it. And I get it. Like, it was a Flash game at a time when Flash was being phased out quickly. There's a lot of... The biggest issue with Flash is there's a lot of security concerns and such.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And it was pretty easy to hack and stuff, so you had problems like that. And it couldn't handle the server load either. Like,
well, and Disney wasn't going to invest the time to convert that to an HTML5 game and to get better dedicated servers.
No, I agree completely.
They got out of gaming completely, if I'm not mistaken.
All right, so let's transition a little bit here and talk about your specialty. And this is something you're going to be bringing to the table on a pretty regular basis. You have a certain corner of gaming that you are a bit of a subject matter expert on, and you have a great affinity for, and you actually own quite a few of, and that is miniature replica arcade cabinets.
That is absolutely correct. the whole thing started a couple of years ago when my wife showed me an ad for Arcade 1-Up that for some reason showed up on her Facebook feed rather than mine. Don't know why that's not her. I don't know why the algorithm picked her because that's not her scene.
Mm-hmm.
But she showed it to me and she said, oh, that's cool. And then I looked at it and I kept looking at it and kept looking at it. This is before the launch. So they're at this point when I saw them, they hadn't launched anything yet. And then I'm like, this is cool. So I started backing them verbally on their official page, answering questions when I became educated. Started answering questions for them because they were getting hammered with questions. Too much for their little, at that time, I think they had a three-person PR team that was handling all of their socials. And I just took it upon myself to start answering questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on their site answering questions for them more frequently than they were themselves. They noticed, reached out to me. There became a bond that has been solidified over the last couple of years. And then they sent me a couple of review units. And now I have 9 of those puppies in my house. So when you walk into my room in here, it's like an arcade. And that's the entire intent of these. People want to complain that it only has 3 games or 2 games. Well, number one, actual arcade cabinets only had 1 game on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were 300 pounds. These are about 80 pounds. You can move them at will. When they're on their riser, the monitor is a lot smaller. It's a 17-inch LCD monitor. So it doesn't have that big-ass heavy CRT in it.
Mm-hmm.
The marquee is going to be a little bit lower than what you're used to with an authentic cabinet because of space constraints. They did it on purpose to keep the licensing down because there's a different licensing structure and a different cost associated with going with, quote, miniature cabinets versus actual full-size arcade cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
So these are officially licensed games that are on these various cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
So when you walk into the room and all of them are on, because sometimes I leave them on just because I want to see them when I go in there. It's kind of stupid, but I do. But when you walk in there, it's going to bring you back to the 80s and 90s arcades. That's the whole reason for them. That's the whole reason they all have different artwork. That's the reason they have different games. It's because what the company figured out, and they didn't set out this way, they just found out organically that people wanted these not for the games per se, they wanted it for the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that put the company into overdrive, securing more licenses than they probably were initially set out to get, so they could come out with different SKUs. And that's why they have, I don't know, I haven't counted recently, but that's why they now have bar tops. Mm-hmm. They have countertops. They have cocktail tables. I know you remember cocktail tables from your Pizza Huts back in the day, don't you?
Yep.
And they have the uprights. And now they're coming out with the different form factors for the side art. Like Burger Time has the little chef hat cut out. It's mm-hmm. like a die cut thing.
Nice. So,
That's why I wanted these, and that's why to this day, I still back this company 2 years down the road. I have regular conversations with the CEO, with the senior vice president of licensing. I know virtually everybody in the company. I'm not dropping names just for the sake of dropping names. I'm simply illustrating how into this I am. Mm-hmm. And since Arcade 1-Up came to life and brought these arcade cabinets, scaled down arcade cabinets to the house. There are other companies that are doing it. At Games has their own version out, which has multiple games, like hundreds of games built into it. And it has the ability for you to bring your own game, and it has where you can actually play your Steam games on it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a different customer. The customer that wants that is only wanting the one cabinet because they're just plain Jane. It's black cabinet. There's no artwork. You're getting that one specifically to house all of your games, which is perfect for somebody probably in a dorm room or that doesn't have the space to devote to multiple cabinets like I do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have another company that's doing a Kickstarter right now that just recently went over the $500,000 pledge mark for their own version of a scaled down cabinet. And the unique thing about this one, it's II Arcade, and I'm also going to be partnering with them a little bit, in for whatever faction that is, helping them out with whatever influence that I exert. The difference between that one and the other ones is this one will have retro games on it. It's going to be a bigger monitor, 19-inch LCD, but it's going to have retro games in it, but it's going to have an app store, and you're going to be able to play current games on it as well.
Nice.
So, yeah. So you're going to be able to play Fortnite on it if you want, anything from your Steam library. If you want to try to play it with arcade controls, it's going to have those Sanwa sticks.
That's awesome.
So you're going to be able to try it. Yeah. I don't know if people might want to stay with the point and click with the mouse, but the option's going to be there for those that want to try to play Fortnite with a arcade control.
I mean, I tell you, there's going to be people who just want to try it for the novelty alone. You know, and that's totally fine. Maybe not Fortnite as much, but there's going to be, I could think of tons of indie titles and stuff on Steam that people would love to play on an arcade cabinet. And especially a lot of the ones with great pixel art style graphics that could just feel at home on a traditional arcade cab. So
any platformer will work on it.
Yep. That's awesome. That's actually really cool.
Yeah, and that doesn't even touch the even smaller arcade cabinets like Tiny Arcade, which I have a few of those as well. They're no bigger than a Christmas ornament, but they're functional arcade cabinets. You can actually, they're very small. It's like, I think it's like a 1-inch screen, but you can actually, if you have the vision to, which I don't, you can actually play Ms. Pac-Man. I've got Ms. Pac-Man Defender, and I forget which other ones I have. And then you have ones that are a little bit bigger called My Arcade that have a 3-inch screen. And then you have Numbskull, which might be my next foray, which are half scale, and their cabinets are identical in the way they look and play to the arcade original. And wow. they're using the actual arcade ROMs. And that's another thing about the Arcade 1-Up is they're officially licensed games. It's emulation, yes, but it's officially licensed. They're using the official arcade ROMs. They're not going in there with NES ROMs, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Wow. It's such a crazy emerging niche. Because, you know, when we first recorded this episode, we talked a bit about how until these mini cabs became available, your only option was to buy a vintage full cab, or to get one made by a custom manufacturer. And neither one of those endeavors is cheap or very, you know, accessible to the average person, depending on the kind of home you have or whatever, what your resources are, both monetarily and just space and all of that. Because, you know, we talked about that. These mini cabs are, how many pounds are they?
Well, when they're on the ride by themselves, they're half scale. When they're sitting on the floor, where you have to actually like sit in a chair because you can't stand or too short, they're 63 pounds. Mm-hmm. When you add the riser, then add another 20 pounds to it.
That's so still not that bad.
100 pounds. No, yeah, it's not.
Whereas a full arcade cab, classic arcade cab, is going to be several hundred pounds, in the least. And it's going to have archaic equipment inside of it that is really big, really bulky, really heavy. And
good luck finding a CRT.
Yeah, good luck finding replacements and parts and stuff when you have problems. It's just a huge headache. It's worth it if you're somebody who has the means and the desire to preserve. You know, if you're looking at it for an archival purpose and, like, you want to collect and everything, that's fine. But that's the creme de la creme. Like, that's the top-end stuff. These mini cabs, because, you know, I've taken shots at the mini cabs before. I've looked at the arcade one ups and been like, you know, the classic Zoolander line, what are these, arcade cabs for ants? But right. Honestly, if it makes people happy and it lets people kind of recreate a small scaled down arcade in their home, that's really cool.
Absolutely. And that may not have been the original intent that the company set out to do. But that's what it quickly grew to. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are pictures. I run a group on Facebook that has roughly 5,500 people in it, maybe a little less, dedicated to Arcade 1-Up. And every so often, I'll have a contest for people to submit their game room pictures, and I'll use their specific game rooms as the banner for the group.
Nice.
And there are people that literally have 16 to 17 of these things.
That's wild.
Yes. I mean, they're usually using their, you know, their basements or garages if they're not using them for cars. But and they're going all out. They're getting, you know, they're getting the every nerd thing you could possibly think of. The current banner has a guy that's got Star Wars AT-ATs and things like that on his wall above his cabinets.
Nice.
It's nerd paradise. It is.
I love it when people go all out on their game rooms and just like they just make it as awesome and as comfy as they possibly can, because it just, I love it when people deep dive into the nerddom. I equally like it when I see, like, say, for example, somebody who's a big, like, tabletop RPG, like Dungeons and Dragons player, who, like, has a bunch of bookshelves with all the books on it, and they have the big table and all the cool terrain and stuff like that. I just love it when people commit and they create a space that lets you have a truly evocative experience in whatever it be, whether it be the video games or the tabletop games or something like that. And it is so cool that people can now do that in an accessible fashion. And it just, you couple that with all the boom in vintage retro games and just like people buying old consoles and buying collections of old games and how that's been kind of blowing up for a few years now. It's a great time to be into capturing the gaming experience of the past. And I know some people like my friend Chris, he takes his kids and he introduced his son to the Atari first. He's like, he sat him down with the Atari. He's like, no, you don't get to play on the NES or the PlayStation yet. You know, you gotta start at the roots. And he's worked them up through. He doesn't make him play every game. He did make him play Ghosts and Goblins a whole bunch until he cried.
Oh God.
it's a thing. And basically, yeah, like, he brought him up through the history of gaming, and his goal is, like, I want my son to understand where this stuff originated, where it came from, and where it can go, and to play current-gen stuff and appreciate it, and not just get sucked in by the dog and pony show that is modern games and, like, all the spectacle and everything and the distractions. He's like, no, I want them to understand what good gameplay is and to know that old games are really freaking hard and really freaking hard.
Did he ask anyone?
Yeah.
Have you ever beat Battletoads? Do you know anybody that has ever beaten Battletoads?
No, I don't.
I don't.
for me as a kid, it was always the Turtles games. Like, when they got ported to the NES, like, trying to beat those games, it was like, oh my god, this is so difficult. And they're not even that bad. They're not, probably not even, they're not even like Lion King or Battletoads level difficult. So
no, they weren't necessarily hard. I think that the developers were pissed off when they made those games. There's no other explanation for it.
I don't want to make a TMNT game.
Or I don't want to make a knockoff TMNT game with toads.
Oh boy. Well, what do you say, Twiggy? We wrap it up for our first episode here?
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Perfectly fine. So we're going to do this. Maybe we'll do this every week. Maybe we'll do it. We'll see how it goes. We've already talked about getting a couple episodes under our belt, get each other felt out a little bit. And then in the future, we might consider, you know, if some of you guys, if you guys like the show and you listen and you maybe want to see some more, maybe we'll stream it at some point. We'll see. No promises yet, but it could be on the horizon. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening. Twig, where can people find you on social media?
I'm Get Off My Lawn Gaming on all of my socials. So you just look for me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Get Off My Lawn Gaming. I am old. The name fits. That's where I'm at.
And you can find me on Twitch and Twitter at Soapbox Klotz. My stream schedule has not been super consistent lately, but I will start streaming again very soon. So check that out. I also have another podcast with my fiance Nicole called Crash Test Pilots. Please go check that out. We watch the first episode of television programs and give you the rundown and what we thought of it. It's a lot of fun. Think of it like a book club for new TV shows. We're in our third season now. We've done over 30 episodes, so there's a little something for everybody out there. Go check that out.
It have to be new TV shows?
No. We did the original Star Trek already.
Okay.
We went way back. So, yeah.
Well, I have a perfect opportunity, since you have that show, to force you to watch a show that I've been unsuccessful in getting you to sit all the way through the six seasons of it.
We have a special guest. We have a special guest coming in this season to make us watch Lost. Yeah, I know.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Well, we have three guests in season three. Anthony from Adventure Inc. is going to join us, and he's going to have us watch Lost. So that is happening this season. So you're going to listen to that episode, right?
Yes, I will absolutely check it out, because I want to get the that's my favorite show of all time.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people say that. We have some other friends who say the same thing. So, yeah, check that out. I wasn't here to just strictly plug that, but, you know, we're proud of it. We're really proud of that show, so please check that out. Stay tuned. We're going to do more of this. We're going to have more topics to talk about, and you can always hit us up on social media and give us a suggestion. Hey, if you want to hear two grumpy dudes talk about a certain topic, just let us know. And so we'll see you next time.
If you want to hear me rant about Ghosts and Goblins for an hour, I have no problem doing it.
For an hour? Do I have to be here for the whole thing?
No, you can go play something, because it'll take me an hour to get that shit off my chest over 30 years of trying to beat that fucking game.
Okay, yeah, I'll hit record and, like, go play something. All right, folks, we'll see you next time.
See ya.